After Ren was gone, neither of them talked about her. They watched one more Simon movie and ate giant pieces of spaghetti lasagna, and her dad realized for the first time that they didn't have a Christmas tree. "How did we forget the tree?" he asked, looking at the spot by the window seat where they usually put it. "There was a lot going on," Kath said.
"Why couldn't Santa get out of bed on Christmas?" her dad asked, like he was setting up a joke.
"I don't know. Why?"
"Because he's North Bipolar."
"No," Kath said, "because the bipolar bears were really bringing him down."
"Because Rudolph's nose just seemed too bright."
"Because the chimneys make him claustrophobic."
"Because," her dad laughed, "the highs and lows were too much for him. On the sled, get it?"
"That's terrible," Kath said, laughing. Her dad's eyes looked bright, but not too bright. She waited for him to go to bed before she went upstairs. Ren still wasn't home. Kath tried to write, but closed her laptop after 15 minutes of staring at a blank screen. She crawled under her blankets and tried not to think about Ren, tried not to picture her in Laura's new house, with Laura's new family. Kath tried not to think of anything at all. When she cleared her head, she was surprised to find Levi there, underneath all the clutter. Levi in God's country, probably having the merriest Christmas of them all. Merry. That was Levi 365 days a year. On leap years, 366. Levi probably loved leap years. Another day, another girl to kiss. It was a little easier to think about him now that Kath knew she'd never have him, that she'd probably never see him again. She fell asleep thinking about his dirty blonde hair and his overabundant forehead, and everything else that she wasn't quite ready to forget.
"Since there isn't a tree," their dad said, "I put your presents under this photo of us standing next to a Christmas tree in 2005. Do you know that we don't even have any houseplants? There's nothing alive in this house but us."
Kath looked down at the small heap of gifts and laughed. They were drinking eggnog and eating two-day-old pan dulce, sweetbread with powdery pink icing. The pan dulce came from Abel's bakery. They'd stopped there after the supermercado. Kath had stayed in the car. She figured it wasn't worth the awkwardness. It had been months since she'd stopped returning Abel's occasional texts, and at least a month since he'd stopped sending them. "Abel's grandma hates my hair," Ren said when she got back into the car. "Que pena, que lastima, niño." "Did you get the tres leches cake?" Kath asked. "They were out." "Que lastima." Normally, Kath would have a present from Abel and one from his family under the tree. The pile of presents this year was especially thin, mostly envelopes. Kath gave Ren a pair of Ecuadorian mittens that she'd bought outside of the Union. "It's alpaca," she said, "warmer than wool, and hypoallergenic." "Thanks," Ren said, smoothing out the mittens in her lap. "So I want my gloves back," Kath said. Ren gave Kath two t-shirts she'd bought online. They were cute and would probably be flattering, but this was the first time in 10 years that Ren hadn't given her something to do with Simon Snow. It made Kath feel tearful suddenly, and defensive. "Thanks," she said, folding the shirts back up. "These are really cool." iTunes gift certificates from their dad, bookstore gift certificates from their grandma. Aunt Lynn had sent them underwear and socks, just to be funny. After their dad opened his gifts, everybody gave him clothes, there was a small silver box under the Christmas tree photo. Kath reached for it. There was a fancy tag hanging by a burgundy ribbon. "Cather," it said in showy black script. For a second, Kath thought it was from Levi. "Cather," she could hear him say, everything about his voice smiling. She untied the ribbon and opened the box. There was a necklace inside, an emerald, her birthstone. She looked up at Ren and saw a matching pendant hanging from her neck. Kath dropped the box and stood up, moving quickly, clumsily toward the stairs. "Kath," Ren called after her, "let me explain." Kath shook her head and ran the rest of the way to her room. Kath tried to picture her mom, the person who had given her this necklace. Ren said she was remarried now and lived in a big house in the suburbs. She had stepkids, too, grown ones. In Kath's head, Laura was still young. Too young, everyone always said, to have two big girls. That always made their mom smile. When they were little and their mom and dad would fight, Ren and Kath worried their parents were going to get divorced and split them up, just like in The Parent Trap. "I'll go with Dad," Ren would say. "He needs more help." Kath would think about living alone with her dad, spacey and wild, or alone with her mom, chilly and impatient. "No," she said, "I'll go with Dad. He likes me more than Mom does." "He likes both of us more than Mom does," Ren argued. "Those can't be yours," people would say. "You're too young to have such grown-up girls." "I feel too young," their mom would reply. "Then we'll both stay with Dad," Kath said. "That's not how divorce works, dummy." When their mom left without either of them, in a way it was a relief. If Kath had to choose between everyone, she'd choose Ren. Their bedroom door didn't have a lock, so Kath sat against it, but nobody came up the stairs. She sat on her hands and cried like a little kid. Too much crying, she thought. Too many kinds. She was tired of being the one who cried.
"You're the most powerful magician in 100 ages. The humdrum's face, Simon's own boyhood face, looked dull and tired. Nothing glinted in its blue eyes.
"Do you think that much power comes without sacrifice? Did you think you could become you without leaving something? Without leaving me behind?"
From Chapter 23, Simon Snow and the Seventh Oak. Copyright 2010 by Gemma T. Leslie.
Chapter 21. Their dad got up to jog every morning. Kath woke up when she heard his coffee maker beep. She'd get up and make him breakfast, then fall back to sleep on the couch until Ren woke up. They'd pass on the staircase without a word. Sometimes Ren went out. Kath never went with her. Sometimes Ren didn't come home. Kath never waited up. Kath had a lot of nights alone with her dad, but she kept putting off talking to him, really talking to him. She didn't want to be the thing that made him lose his balance, but she was running out of time. He was supposed to drive them back to school in 3 days. Ren was even agitating to go back a day early, on Saturday, so they could settle in, which was code for go to lots of frat parties. On Thursday night, Kath made huevos rancheros, and her dad washed the dishes after dinner. He was telling her about a new pitch. Gravioli was going so well, his agency was getting a shot at a sister brand, Frankenbeans. Kath sat on a bar stool and listened.
"So I was thinking. Maybe this time I just let Kelly pitch his terrible ideas first. Cartoon beans with Frankenstein hair, monstrously delicious, whatever. Those people always reject the first thing they hear."
"Dad, I need to talk to you about something." He peeked over his shoulder.
"I thought you'd already Googled all that period and birds and bees stuff."
"Dad." He turned around, suddenly concerned.
"Are you pregnant? Are you gay? I'd rather you were gay than pregnant. Unless you're pregnant, then we'll deal. Whatever it is, we'll deal. Are you pregnant?"
"No," Kath said.
"Okay."
He leaned back against the sink and began tapping wet fingers against the counter. "I'm not gay either."
"What does that leave?"
School, I guess."
"You're having problems in school? I don't believe that. Are you sure you're not pregnant?
I'm not really having problems, Kath said. I've just decided that I'm not going back. Her dad looked at her like he was still waiting for her to give a real answer. I'm not going back for second semester, she said.
Because?
Because I don't want to. Because I don't like it. He wiped his hands on his jeans.
You don't like it?
I don't belong there. He shrugged.
Well, you don't have to stay there forever.
No, she said. I mean, UNL is a bad fit for me. I didn't choose it. Ren did. And it's fine for Ren. She's happy. But it's bad for me. It's like every day there is still the first day.
But Ren is there.
Kath shook her head. She doesn't need me. Not like you do, Kath just stopped herself from saying.
What will you do?
I'll live here. Go to school here.
At UNO?
Yeah.
Have you registered?
Kath hadn't thought that part through yet. I will.
You should stick out the year, he said. You'll lose your scholarship.
No, Kath said. I don't care about that.
Well, I do.
That's not what I meant. I can get loans. I'll get a job, too.
And a car?
I guess. Her dad took off his glasses and started cleaning them with his shirt.
You should stick out the year. We'll look at it again in the spring.
No, she said. I just... She rubbed the neck of her t-shirt into her sternum. I can't go back there. I hate it, and it's pointless, and I can do so much more good here. He sighed.
I wondered if that's what this was about.
He put his glasses back on.
Kath, you're not moving back home to take care of me.
That's not the main reason, but it wouldn't be a bad thing. You do better when you're not alone.
I agree, and I've already talked to your grandmother. It was too much, too soon when you guys both moved out at once. Grandma's going to check in with me a few times a week. We're going to eat dinner together. I might even stay with her for a while, if things start to look rough again.
So you can move back home, but I can't? I'm only 18.
Exactly. You're only 18. You're not going to throw your life away to take care of me.
I'm not throwing my life away, such as it is, she thought. I'm trying to think for myself for the first time. I followed Ren to Lincoln, and she doesn't even want me there. Nobody wants me there.
Tell me about it, he said. Tell me why you're so unhappy.
It's just everything. There are too many people, and I don't fit in. I don't know how to be. Nothing that I'm good at is the sort of thing that matters there. Being smart doesn't matter, and being good with words. And when those things do matter, it's only because people want something from me, not because they want me. The sympathy in his face was painful.
This doesn't sound like a decision, Kath. This sounds like giving up.
So what? I mean... Her hands flew up, then fell in her lap. So what? It's not like I get a medal for sticking it out. It's just school. Who cares where I do it?
You think it would be easier if you lived here?
Yes.
That's a crappy way to make decisions.
Says who? Winston Churchill?
What's wrong with Winston Churchill?
Her dad said, sounding mad for the first time since they'd started talking. Good thing she hadn't said Franklin Roosevelt. Her dad was nuts about the Allied forces. Nothing. Nothing. Just... Isn't giving up allowed sometimes? Isn't it okay to say, this really hurts, so I'm going to stop trying?
It sets a dangerous precedent.
For avoiding pain?
For avoiding life.
Kath rolled her eyes. Ah, the horse again.
You and your sister and the eye rolling. I always thought you'd grow out of that.
He reached out and took her hand. She started to pull away, but he held tight.
Kath, look at me.
She looked up at him reluctantly. His hair was sticking up, and his round, wire-rimmed glasses were crooked on his nose.
There is so much that I'm sorry for, and so much that scares me.
They both heard the front door open. Kath waited a second, then pulled her hand away and slipped upstairs.
Dad told me, Wren whispered that night from her bed.
Kath picked up her pillow and left the room. She slept downstairs on the couch. But she didn't really sleep, because the front door was right there, and she kept imagining someone breaking in. Her dad tried to talk to her again the next morning. He was sitting on the couch in his running clothes when she woke up. Kath wasn't used to him fighting her like this, fighting either of them ever about anything. Even back in junior high, when she and Wren used to stay up too late on school nights, hanging out in the Simon Snow forums, the most their dad would ever say was, "Won't you guys be tired tomorrow?" And since they'd come home from break, he hadn't even mentioned the fact that Wren was staying out all night.
"I don't want to talk anymore," Kath said when she woke up and saw him sitting there.
She rolled away from him and hugged her pillow.
"Good," he said. "Don't talk. Listen. I've been thinking about you staying home next semester."
"Yeah?" Kath turned her head toward him.
"Yeah."
He found her knee under the blanket and squeezed it.
"I know that I'm part of the reason you want to move home. I know that you worry about me, and that I give you lots of reasons to worry about me."
She wanted to look away, but his eyes were unshakable sometimes, just like Wren's.
"Kath, if you're really worried about me, I'm begging you, go back to school. Because if you drop out because of me, if you lose your scholarship, if you set yourself back because of me, I won't be able to live with myself."
She pushed her face back into the couch. After a few minutes, the coffee maker beeped, and she felt him stand up. When she heard the front door close, she got up to make breakfast. She was upstairs writing when Wren came up that afternoon to start packing. Kath didn't have much to pack, or not to pack. All she'd really brought home with her was her computer. For the last few weeks, she'd been wearing clothes that she and Wren hadn't liked well enough to take to college with them.
"You look ridiculous," Wren said.
"What?
That shirt."
It was a Hello Kitty shirt from 8th or 9th grade. Hello Kitty dressed as a superhero. It said Super Cat on the back, and Wren had added an H with fabric paint. The shirt was cropped too short to begin with, and it didn't really fit anymore. Kath pulled it down self-consciously.
"Kath," her dad shouted from downstairs. "Phone."
Kath picked up her cell phone and looked at it. "He must mean the house phone," Wren said. "Who calls the house phone?" "Probably 2005. I think it wants its shirt back."
"Ha, bloody ha," Kath muttered, heading downstairs.
Her dad just shrugged when he handed her the phone.
"Hello?"
Kath said.
"Do we want a couch?" someone asked.
"Who is this?"
"It's Reagan. Who else would it be? Who else would need to get your permission before they brought home a couch?"
"How'd you get this number?"
"It's on our housing paperwork. I don't know why I don't have your cell. I guess I usually don't have to look very far to find you."
"I think you're the first person to call our house phone in years. I didn't even remember where it was."
"That's fascinating, Kath. Do we want a couch?"
"Why would we want a couch?"
"I don't know. Because my mom is insisting that we need one."
"Who would sit on it?"
"Exactly. It might have been useful last semester to keep Levi from shedding all over our beds, but that's not even an issue anymore. And if we have a couch, we'll literally have to climb over it to get to the door."
"She's saying no, Mom." "Why isn't Levi an issue anymore?"
"Because it's your room. It's stupid for you to be hiding in the library all the time. And he and I only have one class together next semester anyway."
"It doesn't matter," Kath said. Reagan cut her off. Don't be stupid. It does matter. I feel really shitty about what happened. I mean, it's not my fault that you kissed him and that he kissed that idiot blonde, but I shouldn't have encouraged you. It won't happen again, ever, with anyone. I'm fucking done with encouragement.
It's okay, Kath said.
I know that it's okay. I'm just saying that's the way it's going to be. So no to the couch, right? My mom is standing right here, and I don't think she'll leave me alone until she hears you say no.
No, Kath said, then raised her voice. No to the couch.
Fuck, Kath, my eardrum. Mom, you're pushing me to swear with this stupid furniture. All right, I'll see you tomorrow. I'll probably have an ugly lamp with me, and maybe a rug. She's pathological.
Kath's dad was standing in the kitchen watching her. Her dad, who actually was pathological.
Who is that? He asked.
My roommate.
She sounds like Kathleen Turner.
Yeah, she's something. Kath pulled her shirt down and turned away.
Taco truck? He asked. For dinner?
Sure.
Why don't you change? You can ride with me.
Sure. Spring semester, 2012.
Fried tomatoes at breakfast. Every lump in his bed. Being able to do magic without worrying whether anyone was watching. Agatha, of course, and Penelope. Getting to see the mage. Not often, but still. Simon's uniform. His school tie. The football pitch, even when it was muddy. Fencing. Raisin scones every Sunday with real clotted cream. What didn't Simon miss about Watford? From Chapter 1, Simon Snow and the Selkies 4. Copyright 2007 by Gemma T. Leslie.
Chapter 22.
There are already 4 light fixtures in here, Reagan said. What are we supposed to do with a lamp?
The lamp was black and shaped like the Eiffel Tower. Just leave it in the hall, Kath said. Maybe somebody'll take it.
She'll just ask where it is the next time she's here. She's insane.
Reagan shoved the lamp into the back of her closet and kicked it.
What brand of crazy is your mom?
Kath's gut pitched reliably. I don't know. She left when I was 8.
Fuck, Reagan said. That is crazy. Are you hungry?
Yeah, Kath said.
They're doing a back-to-school luau downstairs. They roast a pig on a spit. It's disgusting.
Kath grabbed her ID and followed Reagan to the dining hall. In the end, Kath hadn't decided to come back. She'd just decided to pack up her laptop. And then she'd decided to ride along with Ren and her dad to Lincoln. And then, after they dropped Ren off outside Schramm Hall, her dad asked if Kath wanted to go to her own dorm, and Kath decided that she did. If nothing else, she could get her stuff. And then they just sat there in the fire lane, and Kath felt wave after wave of anxiety pound against her. If she stayed, she'd see Levi again. She'd have to deal with the psych final she'd missed. She'd have to register for classes. And who even knew what would still be available? And she'd see Levi again. And everything about that would feel good, his smiling face, his long lines, would also feel like getting shot in the stomach. Kath didn't really decide to get out of the car. She just looked over at her dad in the driver's seat, tapping his 2 middle fingers on the steering wheel. And as scared as she was to leave him, Kath couldn't bear to think about letting him down. One more semester, she said. She was crying. That's how bad it felt to say this. His chin jerked up.
Yeah?
I'll try.
Me too, he said.
Promise?
Yeah. Kath, yeah, I promise. Do you want me to come up with you?
No, that'll just make it worse. He laughed. What?
Nothing.
I just flashed back to your first day of kindergarten. You cried, and your mom cried. It felt like we were never going to see you guys again.
Where was Ren?
God, I don't know. Probably anointing her first boyfriend.
Mom cried? Her dad looked sad again and smiled ruefully.
Yeah.
I really hate her, Kath said, shaking her head, trying to imagine what kind of mother cried on the first day of kindergarten, then walked out in the middle of third grade. Her dad nodded.
Yeah.
Answer your phone, Kath said.
I will.
Somebody else got Ugg boots for Christmas, Reagan said, watching the dinner line empty into the dining hall. If we had whiskey, this is when we'd take a shot.
I find Ugg boots really comforting, Kath said.
Why? Because they're warm?
No, because they remind me that we live in a place where you can still get away with, even get excited about Ugg boots. In fashionable places, you have to pretend that you're over them or that you've always hated them. But in Nebraska, you can still be happy about new Ugg boots. That's nice. There's no end of the innocence.
You're such a weirdo, Reagan said. I kind of missed you.
I just don't want to, Simon said. Don't want to what? Baz asked. He was sitting on his desk, eating an apple. He left the apple in his teeth and started tying his green and purple school tie. Simon still had to use a mirror for that, even after 7 years. Anything, Simon said, pressing his head back into his pillow. I don't want to do anything. I don't even want to start this day, because then I'll just be expected to finish it. Baz finished his half-Windsor and took a bite out of the apple. Now, now, Snow, that doesn't sound like the most powerful magician in 100 ages talking. That's such crap, Simon said. Who even started calling me that? Probably the mage. He won't shut up about you. The one who was prophesied. The hero we've been waiting for, etc. I don't want to be a hero. Liar. Baz's eyes were cool grey and serious. Today, Simon said, chastened. I don't want to be a hero today. Baz looked at his apple core, then tossed it onto Simon's desk. Are you trying to talk me into skipping political science?
Yes. Done, Baz said. Now get up.
Simon grinned and leapt out of bed. From Carry On Simon, posted January 2012, by fanfics.net author Magicath.
Chapter 23. What does ink mean? Kath asked. Reagan looked up from her bed. She was making flashcards. Reagan liked flashcards. And there was a cigarette hanging from her mouth, unlit. She was trying to quit smoking.
Ask that question again so it makes sense.
I-N-C, Kath said. I got my grades back, but instead of an A or a B, it says ink.
Incomplete, Reagan said.
It means they're holding your grade.
Who is?
I don't know. Your professor.
Why?
I don't know. It's usually like a special thing, like when you get extra time to make something up.
Kath stared at her grade report. She'd made up her psychology final the first week back, so she was expecting to see the A there. Her grade was so high in psychology, she practically didn't need to take the final. But fiction writing was a different story. Without turning in a final project, the best that Kath had expected was a C, and a D was far more likely. Kath was okay with that. She'd made peace with that D. It was the price she'd decided to pay for last semester, for Nick and Levi, for plagiarism. It was the price for learning that she didn't want to write books about decline and desolation in rural America, or about anything else.
Kath was ready to take her D and move on. Ink.
What am I supposed to do? She asked Reagan.
Fuck, Kath, I don't know. Talk to your professor. You're giving me lung cancer.
This was Kath's third time back in Andrews Hall since she got her grades back. The first two times, she'd walked in one end of the building and walked straight through to the door on the other side. This time was already better. This time, she'd stopped to use the bathroom. She'd walked into the building just as 4 o'clock classes were getting out, a flash flood of girls with cool hair and boys who looked like Nick. Kath ducked into the bathroom, and now she was sitting in a wooden stall, waiting for the coast to clear. Somebody had taken the time to carve most of Stairway to Heaven into the stall door. It was a serious amount of carving. English majors. Kath didn't have any English classes this semester, and she was thinking about changing her major. Or maybe she'd just change her concentration from creative writing to Renaissance lit. That would be useful in the real world, a head full of sonnets and Christ imagery. If you study something that nobody cares about, does that mean everyone will leave you alone? She opened the stall door slowly, flushing the toilet for appearances, then ran water in one of the sinks, hot in one faucet, cold in the other, and rinsed her face. She could do this. She just had to find the department office, then ask where Professor Piper's personal office was. Professor Piper probably wouldn't even be there. The hallway was nearly empty now. Kath found the stairs and followed the signs pointing to the main office. Down the hall, around the corner. Maybe if she just walked by the main office, that would be enough progress for the day. She walked slowly, touching each wooden door. Kath? Even though it was a woman's voice, Kath's first panicky thought was Nick. Kath! She turned toward the voice and saw Professor Piper in the office across the hall, standing up behind her desk. The professor motioned for Kath to come forward. Kath did. I've been wondering about you, Professor Piper said, smiling warmly. You just disappeared. Come in. Come talk to me. She motioned for Kath to sit down, so Kath did. Apparently, Professor Piper could control Kath with simple hand gestures, like the dog whisperer. The professor came around to the front of her desk and hopped onto it, her signature move. What happened to you? Where did you go?
I didn't go anywhere, Kath said.
She was thinking about going right now. This was too much progress. She hadn't planned for this eventuality, for actually accomplishing what she came here to do.
But you never turned in your story, Professor Piper said. Did something happen?
Kath took a deepish breath and tried to sound steady.
Sort of. My dad was in the hospital, but that's not really why. I'd already decided not to write it.
The professor looked surprised. She held on to the lip of her desk and leaned forward.
But Kath, why? I was so eager to see what you'd do.
Kath started again. I realized that I'm not cut out for fiction writing. Professor Piper blinked and pulled her head back.
What are you talking about? You're exactly cut out for it. You're a Butterick pattern, Kath. This is what you were meant to do.
It was Kath's turn to blink.
No, I kept trying to start the story. Look, I know how you feel about fan fiction, but that's what I want to write. That's where my passion is, and I'm really good at it.
I'm sure you are, Professor Piper said. You're a natural storyteller. But that doesn't explain why you didn't finish your final project.
Once I realized that it wasn't right for me, I couldn't bring myself to do it anymore. I just wanted to move on.
Professor Piper regarded Kath thoughtfully, tapping the edge of the desk. This is what it looks like when a sane person taps her fingers.
Why do you keep saying that it wasn't right for you? The professor asked. Your work last semester was excellent. It was all right. You're one of my most promising students.
But I don't want to write my own fiction, Kath said as emphatically as she could. I don't want to write my own characters or my own worlds. I don't care about them.
She clenched her fists in her lap. I care about Simon Snow. And I know he's not mine, but that doesn't matter to me. I'd rather pour myself into a world I love and understand than try to make something up out of nothing.
The professor leaned forward.
But there's nothing more profound than creating something out of nothing. Her lovely face turned fierce. Think about it, Kath. That's what makes a god or a mother. There's nothing more intoxicating than creating something from nothing, creating something from yourself.
Kath hadn't expected Professor Piper to be happy about her decision, but she hadn't expected this either. She didn't think the professor would push back.
It just feels like nothing to me, Kath said.
You'd rather take or borrow someone else's creation?
I know Simon and Baz. I know how they think, what they feel. When I'm writing them, I get lost in them completely, and I'm happy. When I'm writing my own stuff, it's like swimming upstream, or falling down a cliff and grabbing at branches, trying to invent the branches as I fall.
Yes, the professor said, reaching out and grasping the air in front of Kath like she was catching a fly.
That's how it's supposed to feel.
Kath shook her head. There were tears in her eyes.
Well, I hate it.
Do you hate it? Or are you just afraid? Kath sighed and decided to wipe her eyes on her sweater. Another type of adult would hand her a box of Kleenex about now. Professor Piper just kept pushing.
You got special permission to be in my class. You must have wanted to write. And your work was delightful. Didn't you enjoy it?
Nothing I wrote compared to Simon.
Good gracious, Kath. Are you really comparing yourself to the most successful author of the modern age?
Yes, Kath said. Because when I'm writing Gemma T. Leslie's characters, sometimes, in some ways, I am better than her. I know how crazy that sounds, but I also know that it's true. I'm not a god. I could never create the world of mages, but I'm really, really good at manipulating that world. I can do more with her characters than I could ever do with my own. My characters are just sketches compared to hers.
But you can't do anything with fan fiction. It's stillborn.
I can let people read it. Lots of people do read it.
You can't make a living that way. You can't make a career.
How many people make a career out of writing anyway? Kath snapped. She felt like everything inside her was snapping, her nerves, her temper, her esophagus.
I'll write because I love it, the way other people knit or a scrapbook, and I'll find some other way to make money.
Professor Piper leaned back again and folded her arms.
I'm not going to talk to you any more about the fan fiction.
Good.
But I'm not done talking to you.
Kath took another deep breath.
I'm afraid, Professor Piper said. Afraid that you're never going to discover what you're truly capable of, that you won't get to see... that I won't get to see any of the wonder that's inside of you. You're right. Nothing you turned in last semester compared to Simon Snow and the Mage's Heir. But there was so much potential. Your characters quiver, Kath, like they're trying to evolve right off the page.
Kath rolled her eyes and wiped her nose on her shoulder.
Can I ask you something? The professor asked.
I'm pretty sure you will anyway,
the older woman smiled. Did you help Nick Manter on his final project? Kath looked up at the corner of the ceiling and quickly licked her bottom lip. She felt a new wave of tears rushing through her head. Damn, she'd had a solid month now of no crying. She nodded.
I thought so, the professor said gently. I could hear you, in some of the best parts.
Kath held every muscle still.
Nick's my teaching assistant. He was just here, actually, and he's in my advanced fiction writing class. His style has shifted quite a bit.
Kath looked at the door. Kath, the professor pressed.
Yes.
Kath still couldn't look at her.
What if I made you a deal?
Kath waited.
I haven't turned in your grade yet. I was hoping you'd come see me, and I don't have to turn it in. I could give you the rest of this semester to finish your short story. You were headed toward a solid A in my class, maybe even an A+.
Kath thought about her grade point average, and her scholarship, and the fact that she was going to have to get perfect grades this semester if she wanted to keep it. She didn't have any room for error.
You could do that? I can do whatever I want with my students' grades. I'm the god of this small thing.
Kath felt her fingernails in her palms.
Can I think about it?
Sure. Professor Piper's tone was air light.
If you decide to do this, I'd like you to meet with me regularly throughout the semester just to talk about your progress. It will be like independent study.
Okay, I'll think about it.
Thank you.
Kath picked up her bag and stood up. She was immediately standing too close to the professor, so she looked down and moved quickly toward the door. She didn't look up again until she was back in her dormitory, stepping out of the elevator.
This is Art.
That's how you answer the phone?
Hey, Kath.
No hello?
I don't like hello. It makes me sound like I have dementia, like I've never heard a phone ring before and I don't know what's supposed to happen next. Hello?
How are you feeling, Dad?
Good.
How good?
I'm leaving work every day at 5. I'm eating dinner with Grandma. Just this morning, Kelly told me that I seemed impressively grounded.
That is impressive.
He'd just told me that we couldn't use Frankenstein in our Frankenbeans pitch because nobody cares about Frankenstein anymore. Kids want zombies.
But they're not called zombie beans.
They will be if fucking Kelly has his way. We're pitching zombini weenies.
Wow. How did you stay grounded through all that?
I was fantasizing about eating his brain.
I'm still impressed, Dad. Hey, I think I'm going to come home next weekend.
If you want. I don't want you to worry about me, Kath. I do better when I know you're happy.
Well, I'm happy when I'm not worried about you. We have a symbiotic relationship.
Speaking of, how's your sister?
Her dad was wrong about worrying. Kath liked to worry. It made her feel proactive, even when she was totally helpless, like with Levi. Kath couldn't control whether she saw Levi on campus, but she could worry about it, and as long as she was worrying about it, it probably wasn't going to happen, like some sort of anxiety vaccine, like watching a pot to make sure it never boiled. She wore comforting grooves in her head, worrying about seeing Levi, then telling herself all the reasons it wasn't going to happen. First, because Reagan had promised to keep him away, and second, because Levi didn't have any business on city campus. Kath told herself that Levi spent all his time either studying Buffalo on East Campus or working at Starbucks or making out in his kitchen with pretty girls. There was no reason for their paths ever to cross. Still, she froze every time she saw blonde hair and a green Carhartt jacket, or every time she wished she did. She froze now. Because there he was, right where he wasn't supposed to be, sitting outside her door, proof positive that she hadn't been worrying enough. Levi saw Kath, too, and sprang to his feet. He wasn't smiling. Thank God, she wasn't up for any of his smiles. Kath stepped warily forward. "Reagan's in class," she said, when she was still a few doors away.
"I know," he said. "That's why I'm here."
Kath shook her head. It could have meant no, or it could have meant I don't understand. Both were true. She stopped walking. Her stomach hurt so bad she wanted to bend over.
"I just need to tell you something," Levi said quickly.
"I really don't want you to come in," she said.
"That's fine. I can tell you out here."
Kath crossed her arms over her stomach and nodded. Levi nodded back. He pushed his hands into his coat pockets.
"I was wrong," he said.
She nodded, because duh, and because she didn't know what he wanted from her. He pushed his hands deeper into his coat.
"Kath," he said earnestly, "it wasn't just a kiss."
"Okay." Kath looked past him to her door. She took a step closer then, toward the door, holding her key up like they were done here. Levi stepped out of her way, confused but still polite. Kath put her key in the door, then held on to the handle, hanging her head forward. She could hear him breathing and fidgeting behind her. Levi. "Which one?" she asked.
"What?"
"Which kiss?" Her voice was weak and thin, wet paper.
"The first one," Levi said after a few seconds.
"But the second one was? It was just a kiss?" Levi's voice got closer.
"I don't want to talk about the second one."
"Too bad."
"Then yes," he said. "It was just a... it was nothing."
"What about the third one?"
"Is that a trick question?"
Kath shrugged.
"Kath, I'm trying to tell you something here."
She turned around and immediately regretted it. Levi's hair was tousled, most of it pushed back, bits of it falling over his forehead. And he wasn't smiling, so his blue eyes were taking over his whole long face. "What are you trying to tell me?"
"That it wasn't just a kiss, Cather. There was no just."
"No just?"
"No."
"So?" Her voice sounded much cooler than she felt. Inside, her internal organs were grinding themselves into nervous pulp. Her intestines were gone. Her kidneys were disintegrating. Her stomach was wringing itself out, yanking on her trachea.
"So... ah!" Levi said, frustrated, running both hands through his hair. "So I'm sorry. I don't know why I said that at the hospital. I mean, I know why I said it, but I was wrong. Really wrong. And I wish I could go back to that morning when I woke up here and have a stern talk with myself so that the rest of this crap wouldn't have happened."
"I wonder," she said, "if there was such a thing as time machines, would anyone ever use them to go to the future?"
"Cather."
"What?"
"What are you thinking?"
What was she thinking? She wasn't thinking. She was wondering if she could live without her kidneys. She was holding herself up on 2 feet. "I still don't know what all this means," she said.
"It means I really like you."
His hand was in his hair again, just the one holding it back.
"Like, really like you. And I want that kiss to have been the start of something, not the end."
Kath looked at Levi's face. His eyebrows were pulled down in the middle, bunching up the skin above his nose. His cheeks, for once, were absolutely smooth, and his lips were at their most doll-like, not even a quirk of a smile.
"It felt like the start of something," he said.
He put his hands in his pockets and swayed forward a little bit, like he wanted to bump into her. Kath backed up flat against the door. She nodded. Okay. 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 She turned around and unlocked the door. You can come in. I'm not sure yet about all the other stuff.
Okay, Levi said.
She heard the very beginning of a smile in his voice, a fetal smile, and it very nearly killed her.
I don't trust you,
Simon said, grasping Basil's forearm.
Well, I don't trust you.
Basil spat at him, actually spat at him, bits of wet landing on Simon's cheeks.
Why do you need to trust me?
Simon asked.
I'm the one hanging off a cliff.
Basil looked down at him, distastefully, his arm shaking from Simon's weight. He swung his other arm down, and Simon grabbed at it.
Douglas J. Hinning,
Basil cursed breathlessly, his body inching forward.
Knowing you, you'll bring the both of us down, just to spite me.
From Carry On Simon, posted November 2010, by fanfics.net author Magicav.
Chapter
24.
Levi sat on her bed. Kath tried to pretend that he wasn't watching while she took off her coat and threaded her scarf out from under her hair. She felt weird taking her snow boots off in front of him, so she left them on. She sat on her chair. How'd you do in YA Lit? She asked. Levi just looked at her for a few seconds.
I got a B-.
That's good, right?
It's great.
She nodded.
How's your dad? He asked.
Better, she said. It's complicated.
How's your sister?
I don't know. We're not really talking. He nodded. I'm not very good at this, Kath said, looking down at her lap.
What?
Whatever this is. Boy-girl stuff. Levi laughed, lightly. What? She asked.
You're a lot better at boy-boy, aren't you?
Ha. They were both quiet again. Levi eventually broke the silence. She was pretty sure he could be counted on in every silence-breaking scenario.
Kath?
Yeah?
Is this... Are you giving me another chance?
I don't know, she said, watching her hands clench and unclench in her lap.
Do you want to?
What do you mean? She let her eyes stumble up to his face. His cheeks were pale, and he was chewing on his bottom lip.
I mean, are you rooting for me?
Kath shook her head, and this time it just meant that she was confused. What do you mean?
I mean...
Levi leaned forward, hands still fisted in his pockets.
I mean, I spent 4 months trying to kiss you, and the last 6 weeks trying to figure out how I managed to fuck everything up. All I want now is to make it right, to make you see how sorry I am, and why you should give me another chance, and I just want to know. Are you rooting for me? Are you hoping I pull this off?
Kath's eyes settled on his, tentatively, like they'd fly away if he moved. She nodded her head. The right side of his mouth pulled up. I'm rooting for you, she whispered. She wasn't even sure he could hear her from the bed. Levi's smile broke free and devoured his whole face. It started to devour her face, too. Kath had to look away. That's how she ended up with 100-watt Levi, sitting on her bed and grinning like everything was going to be just fine. She felt like telling him to slow down, that it wasn't fine, she hadn't forgiven him yet, and even though she was probably going to, she still didn't trust him. She didn't trust anyone, and that was a problem. That was a fundamental problem. You should take off your coat, Kath said instead. Levi unzipped his jacket and shouldered out of it, setting it on her bed. He was wearing a sweater she'd never seen before, an olive-green cardigan with pockets and leather buttons. She wondered if it was a Christmas present.
"Come here," he said.
Kath shook her head. "I'm not ready for come here." Levi reached out and she went still, but he was just reaching toward her desk for her laptop. He picked it up and held it.
"I'm not going to do anything," he said. "Just come here."
"Is that your best line? I'm not going to do anything?"
"I know that sounded stupid," he said, "but you make me nervous."
"Please." The ultimate magic word. Kath was already standing up. She kicked off her boots and sat 12 inches away from him on the bed. If she made Levi nervous, he made her catatonic. He set the computer in her lap. When she looked up to his eyes, he was smiling nervously.
"Cather," he said, "read me some fan fiction."
"What? Why?"
"Because I don't know where else to start. And it makes things easier. It makes you easier."
Kath raised her eyebrows and he shook his head, agitating his hair with one hand.
"That sounded stupid, too."
Kath opened her laptop and turned it on. This was crazy. They should be talking. She should be asking questions. He should be apologizing. And then she should be apologizing and telling him what a bad idea it was for them even to be talking. "I don't remember where we left off," she said.
"Simon had just touched Baz's hand, and it was cold."
"How can you possibly remember that?"
"All of my reading brain cells go to remembering things instead."
Kath opened up the Word doc and scrolled through it. "Baz's hand was cold and limp," she read out loud. When Simon looked closer, he realized that the other boy was asleep. Kath looked up again. "This is weird," she said. "Isn't this weird?" Levi had turned sideways to face her. His arms were folded and his shoulder was pushed into the wall. He smiled at her and shrugged. Kath shook her head again, wasn't sure what she meant by it, then looked down at the computer and started to read. Simon was tired, too. He wondered if there was an enchantment in the nursery that made you sleepy. He thought about all the little babies, the toddlers, about Baz, waking up to a room full of vampires. And then Simon fell asleep. When he woke up, Baz was sitting with his back to the fire, staring up at the rabbit. "I decided not to kill you in your sleep," Baz said without looking down. "Happy Christmas." Simon rubbed his eyes and sat up.
"Thanks.
Have you tried any spells?"
"On what?"
"The hares?" "The letter didn't say to spell them. It just said to find them."
"Yes," Baz said impatiently. They must not have slept long. Baz still looked tired.
"But presumably the sender knows you're a magician and assumes you might actually consider using magic from time to time."
"What kind of spells?" Simon asked, glancing up at the sleeping rabbit. "I don't know."
Baz waved his white-tipped wand in the air.
"Presto changeo."
"A changing spell? What are you trying to do?"
"I'm experimenting."
"Didn't you say I should do more research before barreling forward into danger?"
"That was before I'd stared at this damnable rabbit for half the night."
Baz flicked his wand.
"Before and after."
"Before and after only works on living things," Simon said.
"Experimenting."
"Cock-a-doodle-doo!"
Nothing happened.
"Why didn't you stay asleep?" Simon asked. "You look like you haven't slept since first year. You're pale as a ghost."
"Ghosts aren't pale. They're translucent. And pardon me if I don't feel like snuggling up with you in the room where my mother was murdered."
Simon grimaced and cast his eyes down.
"Sorry," he said. "I hadn't thought of that."
"Stop the bleeding presses," Baz said, and waved his wand at the rabbit again.
"Please."
Baz gulped. Simon thought he might be crying and turned away to give him some space.
"Snow, are you absolutely sure there was nothing more in that letter?"
Simon heard a heavy rustling above them. He looked up to see the giant, luminous animal stirring in its sleep. Baz was stumbling to his feet. Simon stood too and stepped back, taking Baz's arm. "Careful," Baz hissed, jerking away from Simon and away from the fireplace behind them.
"Vampire," Levi said smugly. "Flammable."
Levi's eyes were closed now, and his head was tipped against the wall. Kath looked at him for a moment. He opened an eye and nudged her leg with his knee. She hadn't thought she was sitting that close. Above them, the rabbit seemed to take on dimension and heft. It stretched its back legs against the sky and twitched its nose. Its ears quivered to attention. "Are we supposed to catch it?" Baz asked. "Talk to it? Sing it a nice magical song?" "I don't know," Simon said. "I was awaiting further instructions." The rabbit opened one boulder-sized pink eye. "Here's an instruction. Do you have your sword?" "Yes," Simon said. "Unsheath it." "But it's the moon rabbit," Simon argued. "It's famous." The rabbit turned its head from the ceiling. On closer inspection, its eyes were more red than pink, and opened its mouth to yawn, Simon hoped, revealing incisors like fangs, like long white knives. "Sword, Snow! Now!" Baz was already holding his wand in the air like he was about to start conducting a symphony. He really was grandiose sometimes. Simon held his right hand over his hip and whispered the incantation the mage had taught him. "In justice, in courage, in defense of the weak, in the face of the mighty, through magic and wisdom and good." He felt the hilt materialize in his hand. It wouldn't always come, the mage had warned him. The blade had a mind of its own. If Simon called it in the wrong situation, even in ignorance, the sword of mages wouldn't answer. The hare reached with its forepaw almost timidly toward the floor of the nursery, then fell from the ceiling in a graceful lump, like a pet rabbit shuffling off a sofa. "Don't strike," Simon said. "We still don't know its intentions." "What are your intentions?" he shouted. It was a magic rabbit. Perhaps it could talk. The rabbit cocked its head, as if in answer, and shrieked at the empty spot in the sky. "We're not here to hurt you," Simon said. "Just calm down." "Crowley, Snow, are you going to ask it to heal next?" "Well, we've got to do something." "I think we should run." The rabbit was crouching between them and the door. Simon reached for his wand with his left hand. "Calm down, please," he shouted, trying the powerful word again. The rabbit sent a stream of angry spittle in his direction. "Yes, all right," Simon said to Baz. "We run, on the count of three." Baz had already made a break for the door. The rabbit screeched at him but wouldn't turn its back on Simon. It swiped at Simon's legs with a deadly-looking claw. He managed to jump clear, but the hare immediately aimed at him from the other direction. When it cuffed him on the head, Simon wondered if Baz would even bother to bring back help. It probably wouldn't matter. No one would ever get here in time. Simon swung his sword at the rabbit, slicing it, and it pulled back its paw as if it had caught a thorn there. Then the beast rose up onto its haunches, practically howling. Simon scrambled to his feet and saw ball after ball of fire catch in the rabbit's white fur. "You filthy, bloody rodent," Baz was shouting. "You're supposed to be a protector, a good luck charm, not a fucking monster. To think I used to make cakes for you and burn incense. I take back the cakes." "You tell him," Simon said. "Shut up, Snow. You've got a wand and a sword, and you choose to wag your useless tongue at me?" Simon swung his sword again at the rabbit. In a fight, he always favored his sword over his wand. In between balls of fire magic, Baz was trying paralyzing spells and painful curses. Nothing but the fire seemed to make a difference. The sword was working. Simon could hurt the rabbit, but not enough. He may as well have been scratching at it with an embroidery needle.
"I think it's immune to magic," Baz yelled, just as the rabbit charged toward him.
Simon ran up the hare's back and tried to sink his sword through the dense fur at its scruff. The blade slid along its hide without piercing it. Baz charged, too, casting his wand aside and leaping onto the rabbit's chest. The animal thrashed, and Simon grabbed its neck and held on. He caught glimpses of Baz through the frenzy of fur and fang. The rabbit was swinging at Baz with its teeth, and Baz was holding on to a long ear, bashing at its nose with his arm. Then Baz's head disappeared into the rabbit's fur. The next time Simon saw a flash of him, the other boy's face was painted red with blood.
"Baz!" Simon lost his grip, and the rabbit threw him across the room. He landed on the ring of futons and tried to roll with the impact.
When he picked himself up again, he saw that the rabbit was flailing around on its back, all four paws tearing at the air. Baz lay across its stomach like he was hugging a giant stuffed animal, the white fur around his head a bloody mess.
"No," Simon whispered. "Baz, no!"
He ran toward the rabbit, holding his sword with both hands over his head, then plunged it with all his strength into one red eye. The rabbit collapsed, utterly limp, a paw falling into the fire.
"Baz," Simon croaked, tugging at the other boy's arm. He expected Baz to be limp too, but he wouldn't budge.
Simon tried again, digging his fingers into Baz's slim shoulder. Baz reached back and pushed him off. Simon fell to the ground, confused. That's when he noticed that Baz was pressing his face into the rabbit's neck, nursing at it. There were gashes along the hare's throat and ear, much deeper than anything Simon had accomplished with his sword. Baz hiked his knees up the rabbit's chest and pushed its giant maw to the side, craning his head deeper into the gore at its neck.
"Baz," Simon whispered, slowly finding his feet.
For a few moments, he just watched. Finally, Baz seemed finished. He dropped down off the rabbit and stood there, with his back to Simon. Simon watched as Baz reached for the mage's sword and slid it bloodily from the beast's eye. Baz turned then, pulling his shoulders back and lifting his chin in the air. His face, his whole front, his school tie and his white shirt were slick with blood. It dripped from his nose and his chin and was already puddling under the hand that held the sword. So much blood, as wet as if he'd just stepped out of the bath. Baz tossed the sword and it fell at Simon's feet. Then he rubbed his sleeve across his mouth and eyes. It just moved the blood around, not away. Simon didn't know what to say, how to respond to this, all this bloody information. He picked up the sword and wiped it clean on his cloak. "You all right?" Baz licked his lips, like they were dry, Simon thought, and nodded his head.
"Good," Simon said, and realized that he meant it.
Kath stopped reading. Levi's eyes were open. He was watching her. His mouth was closed, but not tight, and he looked almost excited.
"Is that the end?" he asked.
She held on to the laptop.
"Is this why you like me?"
"Why?"
"Because I read to you?"
"Do I like you because you know how to read?"
"You know what I mean."
His smile widened so she could just see his teeth. It was strange to look at him like this, up close, like she was allowed to.
"Partly," he said.
Kath looked anxiously over his shoulder. "Is Reagan going to mind, you think?
I don't think so. We haven't been together since high school.
How long did you date?
3 years.
Were you in love?
He pushed back his hair, abashed but not ashamed. Desperately.
Oh.
Kath shifted away. Levi tilted his head to catch her eyes.
It was a small town. There were 11 people in our high school class. There was nobody else in a 200-mile radius that either of us would have even considered dating.
What happened?
We came here. We realized that we weren't the only two dateable people on the planet.
She said she cheated on you.
Levi's eyes fell, but he didn't completely stop smiling.
Also that.
How old are you?
21.
Kath nodded. You seem older.
It's the hair, he said, still smiling.
I love your hair, she blurted out. He raised an eyebrow. Just the one.
Kath shook her head, embarrassed, closing her eyes, closing the laptop. Levi let his head fall slowly toward her so that his bangs hung forward and brushed her ear. She pulled her head away, knowing she was blushing.
I like your hair, too, he said. I think, anyway. It's always roped up and tied down.
This is crazy, Kath said, scooting away.
What?
This. You and me. This conversation.
Why?
Well, I don't even know how it happened.
I don't think anything's happened quite yet.
We don't have anything in common, she said. She felt like she was brimming with objections, and they were just now starting to spill out. You don't even know me. You're old, and you smoke, and you have a job. You have experience.
I don't really smoke unless someone else is smoking.
That counts.
But it doesn't matter. Nothing you just said matters, Kath. And most of it isn't even true. We have lots of stuff in common. We talk all the time. We used to. And it just made me want to talk to you more. That's a really good sign.
What do we have in common?
We like each other, he said. What more is there? Also, compared to the rest of the world, we have everything in common. If aliens came down to Earth, they probably wouldn't even be able to tell us apart.
This was too much like what she'd said to Nick.
You do like me, Levi said. Right?
I wouldn't have kissed you if I didn't like you, Kath said.
You might have.
No, she said firmly. I wouldn't have. And I wouldn't have stayed up all night reading to you. Levi smiled so that she could see his canine teeth, and then his bicuspids. It was wrong. He shouldn't be smiling. Why did you tell me it was just a kiss? She asked, waiting for her voice to break. I don't even care about that other girl. I mean, I do, but not as much. Why was your first instinct to tell me that what happened between you and me didn't matter? And why should I believe you now when you say that it did? Why should I believe anything you say? Levi got it now, that he shouldn't be smiling. He looked down at his lap and turned, settling his back against the wall.
I guess I panicked.
Kath waited. Levi pushed his hand into the front of his hair and made a fist. Maybe that's why he was losing it prematurely, constant handling.
I panicked, he said again. I thought that if you knew how much kissing you meant to me, it would seem even worse that I kissed another girl.
Kath let that sink in.
That's terrible reasoning, she said.
I wasn't reasoning.
He turned back to her a little too quickly. I was panicking. Honestly, I'd forgotten all about that girl.
Because you kissed so many girls at parties?
No. I mean,
he looked away.
Sometimes, but no. I only kissed that girl because you weren't there. Because you didn't return my texts. Because I was back to thinking you didn't like me. I was confused and a little drunk, and here was this girl who obviously did like me. She probably left 5 minutes after you did. And 5 minutes after that,
I was staring at my phone, trying to come up with an excuse to call you.
Why didn't you just tell me all that at the hospital?
Because I felt like such an asshole. And I'm not used to being the asshole. I'm usually Dudley Do-Right, you know?
No.
I'm usually the good guy. That was the whole plan for winning you over.
There was a plan?
There was.
He thunked the back of his head against the wall, and his hands fell to his lap.
It was more of a hope that you'd see that I was a decent guy.
I saw that.
Right. And then you saw me kissing somebody else.
Kath wanted him to stop talking. She'd heard enough. The thing is, Levi... Saying his name out loud finished the destruction inside of her. Something, maybe Kath's spleen, gave up the ghost. She leaned forward and pulled on the sleeve of his sweater, squeezing a few inches into her fist. I know you're a decent guy, she said. And I want to forgive you. It's not like you cheated on me. I mean, it's only kind of like that. But even if I do forgive you... She pulled on his new sweater, stretching it. I don't think I'm any good at this. Boy, girl, person, person. I don't trust anybody. Not anybody. And the more that I care about someone, the more sure I am they're going to get tired of me and take off. Levi's face clouded over. Not grimly, she thought. Thoughtfully. In thoughtful clouds. That's crazy, he said. I know. Kath agreed, feeling almost relieved. Exactly. I'm crazy. He reached his fingers back and hooked them inside the cuff of her sweater.
But you still want to give me a chance, right? Not just me, this. Us.
Yeah, Kath said, like she was giving in.
Good.
He tugged on her sleeve and smiled down at their not quite touching hands.
It's okay if you're crazy,
he said softly. You don't even know.
I don't have to know, he said. I'm rooting for you.
He was going to text her the next day. They were going to go out when he got off work. On a date. Levi didn't call it a date, but that's what it would have to be, right? He liked her, and they were going out. He was coming to get her. She wished she could call Ren. I have a date, and not with an end table, not with someone who has anything in common with furniture. He kissed me, and I think he might do it again if I let him. She didn't call Ren. She studied, then stayed up as late as she could writing Baz and Simon. The insidious humdrum, Baz groused. If I ever become a supervillain, help me come up with a name that doesn't sound like an ice cream sundae. And wishing that Reagan would come home. Kath was mostly asleep when the door opened. Reagan shuffled around in the dark. She was good at coming and going without turning on any lights. She almost never woke Kath up. Hey, Kath rasped. Go back to sleep, Reagan whispered. Hey, tonight... Levi came over. I think we might have a date. Is that okay? The shuffling stopped. Yeah, Reagan said, practically in her normal voice. Is it okay with you? I think so, Kath said. Okay. Reagan's closet door opened, and she kicked her boots off with two heavy thumps. A drawer opened and closed, and then she was climbing into bed. So fucking weird, she murmured. I know, Kath said, staring up into the darkness. I'm sorry.
Stop apologizing. Good for you. Good for Levi. Better for you, I think.
What does that mean?
It means that Levi is a great guy, and that he always falls for girls who are a complete pain in the ass.
Kath rolled over and pulled her comforter up tight. Better for me, she agreed.
You're finally going on a date with Agatha? Penelope's voice was soft, despite the surprise in her face. Neither of them wanted Sir Bleakley to hear. He was prone to giving ridiculous detentions. They could end up dusting the catacombs for hours or proofreading confiscated love notes.
"After dinner," Simon whispered back, "we're going to look for the sixth hare in the Veiled Forest. Does Agatha know it's a date? Because that just sounds like another Tuesday night with Simon." "I think so."
Simon tried not to turn and frown at Penelope, even though he wanted to.
"She said she'd wear her new dress."
"Another Tuesday night with Agatha," Penelope said.
"You don't think she likes me?"
"Oh, Simon, I never said that. She'd have to be an idiot not to like you."
Simon grinned.
"So I guess what I'm saying," Penelope said, going back to her homework, "is we'll just have to see."
From Chapter 17, Simon Snow and the Six White Hares, copyright 2009, by Gemma T. Leslie.
Chapter 25. Reagan was sitting at Kath's desk when Kath woke up. "Are you awake? Have you been watching me sleep?" "Yes, Bella. Are you awake?" "No." "Well, wake up. We need to set some ground rules." Kath sat up, rubbing the gunk out of her eyes. "What is wrong with you? If I woke you up like this, you'd murder me." "That's because I've got all the hand in our relationship. Wake up. We need to talk about Levi." "Okay." Kath couldn't help but smile a little, just hearing his name. Levi. She had a date with Levi. "So you guys made up?" "Yeah." "Did you sleep with him?" "Holy crap, Reagan, no!" "Good," Reagan said. She was sitting on Kath's chair with one leg tucked under the other, wearing an intramural football t-shirt and black yoga pants. "I don't want to know when you sleep with him. That's the first ground rule." "I'm not going to sleep with him." "See, that's exactly the kind of thing I don't want to know." "Wait, what do you mean you're not going to sleep with him?" Kath pressed both palms into her eyes. "I mean, not in the immediate future. We just talked." "Yeah, but you've been hanging out with him all year." "Things you pressure me to do. 1, underage drinking. 2, prescription drug abuse. 3, premarital sex." "Oh my God, Kath. Premarital sex? Are you kidding me?" "Where are you going with this?" "Levi was my boyfriend." "I know. All through high school." "I know, I know." Kath was hiding her eyes again. "Don't paint me a picture." "I lost my virginity with him." "Ah, stop, seriously." "This is exactly what the ground rules are for," Reagan said. "Levi is one of my best friends, and I'm your only friend, and I don't want this to get weird." "Too late," Kath said. "And you're not my only friend." "I know." Reagan rolled her eyes and waved a hand in the air. "You've got the whole internet." "What are the ground rules?" Reagan held up a finger. Her nails were long and pink. 1, nobody talks to me about sex. Done. 2, no lovey-dovey stuff in front of me. Done and done. I'm telling you, there is no lovey-dovey stuff. 3, shut up. Nobody talks to me about their relationship. Kath nodded. Fine. 4. You've really been thinking about this, haven't you? I came up with the ground rules the first time you guys kissed. 4. Levi is my friend, and you can't be jealous of that. Kath looked at Reagan, at her red hair and her full lips and her totally outsticking breasts. I feel like it's too soon to agree to that, she said. No, Reagan said. We've got to get this out of the way. You can't be jealous. And in return, I won't flex my best friend muscles just to remind myself and Levi that he loved me first. Oh my God! Kath clutched her comforter in disbelief. Would you actually do that? I might, Reagan said, leaning forward, her face as shocked as Kath's. In a moment of weakness. You've got to understand. I've been Levi's favorite girl practically my whole life. He hasn't dated anyone else, not seriously, since we broke up. God, Kath said. I really hate this. Reagan nodded, and it was like a dozen I told you so's. Why did you let this happen? Kath asked. Why'd you let him hang out here so much?
Because I could tell that he liked you.
Reagan sounded almost angry about it. And I really do want him to be happy. You guys haven't relapsed, have you, since you broke up?
No, Reagan looked away. When we broke up freshman year, it was pretty awful. We only started hanging out again at the end of last year. I knew he was having trouble in his classes, and I wanted to help.
Okay, Kath said, deciding to take this seriously.